Always. I want to move on to our next item, though. Very exciting. Our Cumann na Munsell posted in its recent newsletter that its PRO, Gerry Grogan, was honoured in Croke Park as one of the recipients of the 2024 Gradam an Uachtaráin. And the awards were presented by Uachtaráin of Cumann na Luachtaigh, Larry McCarthy. The award is in recognition for the lifetime of service that Gerry has provided to the GA and to Cumann na Munsell. And we're very grateful to have Gerry as part of our committee and delighted to see him receive the recognition and praise he deserves. Now, Gerry is, of course, a Carrigavulin man, and the Dubs can't take that away from us. But to most people, he's probably best known for his work as the stadium announcer in Croke Park. He's seen some of the biggest days in Irish sporting history in that role, and others he's held at GAHQ over the last, well, we won't say how many years. And he joins me on the line now. Gerry, thanks for joining me on the show, and I appreciate your time this afternoon.
It's a pleasure, Mark. I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you very much.
Now, you were, as I said, you were honoured for your work with Cumann na Munsell, and that's where we'll start. How did you get involved in that? And do you mind me asking when you started?
Not at all. I'm in my 46th year, would you believe, 1978, Mark. it's a fair time back. But I when I started teaching in Dublin in 1978, I hadn't heard of Cumann na Munsell before that, to be honest with you. And I was intent on pursuing a career at second level education. I was doing my degree at night in Irish and English. And I heard of it was quite difficult to get from my work out to UCD for the lectures at night. And I heard of a subbing job going in a primary school in the city centre on Whitefriars Street. And they had a class there that was particularly difficult, and they found it hard to get teachers. And you didn't have to be trained at that time to actually take a class. So I started in Whitefriars Street, loved every minute of it, and went straight into St. Pat's then and did the graduate course, and got a job in Donnymead in 1978 in Holy Trinity School. And that's when I got involved in Cumann na Munsell.
Brilliant.
Taking the school teams, and I got on the committees and so on at that stage as well.
Excellent. And have you always been involved in football then, Gerry? What memories have you of football in Carrigavulin and in Kerry down from your childhood? That would have been a very memorable era for people in that area of the county, definitely.
That's right. Mad football town, as you know, Carrigavulin, and they had street leagues in the schools. We had street leagues in the schools, and I got involved in that, and we had great rivalry between the different streets, and that's where I suppose my love of Gaelic sport started, because the whole town is infused with GAA, as you know, as is most of Kerry. And I had GAA on my father's side. My father, I have cousins who played. In fact, Offaly's very first All-Ireland success with the 1964 minor final, and a cousin of mine, Sean Grogan, actually captained that team.
Oh,
so
excellent.
There was football on my father's side, but yeah, it was Carrigavulin generally, I suppose, where I grew up with the GAA culture. And when I heard of Cumann na Munsell then and in Dublin, I joined.
And what does that work involve, Gerry? I suppose most people only see the few minutes at half time during the big games, or they know it from primary school, from themselves competing at local leagues. But there's probably much more to it than meets the eye, I suppose, with the work behind the scenes.
Well, Dublin is so vast. You know what I mean? We've over 300 schools now taking part in our leagues, and as regards football, it's almost equal now between girls and boys. That's been the most phenomenal thing in my time. The growth of the girls' football. I was involved in starting that myself, and Helen O'Rourke, who's the chief executive of the LGFA, an amazing woman. We decided to start the leagues in 1986, I think it was. We started off. And we only had, what, six or seven schools at a blitz in Fairview Park. And like within a couple of years, we had two groups of 15 taking part in leagues. And it has grown from then. But, you know, it's just getting involved. And obviously with my school first, and I ran the teams there, hurling, football, camogie. I did the whole lot for a long time. And entering the competitions, and we won quite a few things in Croke Park, and that's great for the parish and for the school. And then, you know, to building it up over that period of time with so many teachers involved. I mean, I'd be the kind of public face of it in many ways, but it's just I wouldn't be able to have achieved anything without the what's going on, the work that's going on in the schools by dozens of teachers from all over the country, and many of them from Kerry indeed. And it was built up from, what, 70 or 80 schools, I suppose, when I started first, to well over 300 now taking part. And we're just about ready to start our hurling competitions in a couple of weeks, and the numbers are way up again. It's a massive undertaking. But so many teachers working behind the scenes, doing the games in their schools. And Croke Park is a prize, you know. I mean, it would still be going on if Croke Park wasn't available for our finals, but that is a huge prize. And that's that's going back to 1928, when the organization was founded. It had been going on in Dublin really since about 2001, 2005. There was a big flourish in the thing, because games were nearly dead in the city at that stage, and particularly in the 20s. The thing had kind of lapsed for a while, and some teachers got together, only about five or six, and decided that they had to stop this. Cricket was very popular in Dublin, and soccer, of course, and they decided that Gaelic games were going to die if they didn't do something. And many of the traditional Dublin clubs actually grew from those schools. And those pioneers were fantastic.
You look at where it's gone now, and, you know, the amount of people that maybe this would have been, I suppose, their first, like, involvement in GA, that, you know, a lot of fantastic players down through the years maybe would have been first involved in Dublin, for example, in their schools first before the club. Can you talk to me about some of the high achievers that have come through in those years?
Well, you can go way back, and I'm doing research at the moment on the beginnings of coming to Munster, and you go back to even the players who played for Dublin in the 40s and 50s, and coming up to more recent time, the Kevin Heffernans and the Snitchy Fergusons and Lar Foley, Des Foley, all those, they all played in coming to Munster. Des Foley won a pile of stuff with Sculler and Marino, and Jimmy Keaveney was of more recent times, and Barney Rock. They all played in coming to Munster. Barney captained his school, Second Heart and Ballygall in a final in Croke Park. So practically every dub of renown over the past 40 or 50 years, they all played in coming to Munster, and they're so proud. The first thing they want to talk about is the days that they played with their schools, and the fun in the school, and the excitement, and their first time in Croke Park. And, you know, we had Dean Rock now following on from Barney, who started off with us in the Leinster final in 2000. I got Dean to play in a Leinster final. He wore the Dublin jersey at half time against Kildare. That was his first time playing for Dublin, and Dean has never forgotten that. Barney was pestering me for years to get him involved. He could hardly walk. I'd say, hold on now, Barney, wait till he's a little bit older. But he did, and then he represented our team. We went down and played Kildare and Newbridge, and he played that day as well. He's gone on to wonderful things, as you know. And
yeah, we've a lot to blame you for there, Jay. We have a lot to blame you for. Is that rewarding for yourself to see that huge value in what you're doing? You know, when it plays a part in bringing some of the game's best players to the top of it, gives them a taste of that.
It's great. And Dublin are flying now, and there's great success there. But like when I started off first in Dublin, it was quite difficult to promote Gaelic games in Dublin, because you don't have the same kind of community involvement as you would in a county like Kerry. But success breeds success, and you know you have fantastic clubs here in Dublin and wonderful work going on. But in a city environment, you need success for people to jump on the bandwagon, and that certainly happened in the 70s in particular with the breakthrough of the Dublin Kerry games, and then obviously the most recent ones have generated huge enthusiasm in the schools, and the Dublin kids now are proud to wear their jerseys, and they come from great Gaelic families as well, many of them with country backgrounds.
As I say, most people are probably recognising your voice now at home and getting some kind of natural reaction to shout up Kerry at their radios, and it's because you're ever present really on Kerry's biggest days in the GA intercounty calendar, sometimes Kerry clubs in the club calendar as well. How did you come to be involved in that line of work?
Well, I've been involved since 1978 in Croke Park with the kids putting on halftime games, getting children involved. I went from there. I was asked to look after the press box. Kerry man Danny Lynch was the PRO at the time, as you know, from Croke Park, and I was up there for quite a while. And when Sean Kelly was president in the early 2000s, he asked me to chair his PR and presentation committee, and we made quite a lot of changes to what was going on the field in Croke Park. Calling out the players' names, for example, for the first time, the fanfares from the teams were coming out, halftime entertainment, kids bringing out the cups. We made a lot of changes, and he wanted the stadium announcing done differently as well. The stadium announcing was done from upstairs, from a booth under the scoreboard. The safety announcements are still done from up there, but I was located then on pitch side. That was around 2003, I think. So I think this is my 24th year doing the actual announcing. And that's how it started, really. I had had a bit of previous experience with the coming to Munster Sports, Martin Stadium and Santry. I did the PR there for a good number of years. So, yeah, it was a big undertaking, but I love it.
And are you actually able to watch what's going on and take it in terms of the games that are on? You know, a lot of the time, if someone's working in a match, maybe they can't pay attention or they, you know, they have too much going on. Are you actually able to kind of take it in as a spectacle?
I am very much, yeah. There are interruptions, of course, because I have a radio in my ear. I'm listening to what the referee as well, but I'm getting instructions from upstairs, and I have to concentrate, obviously, because I call out the substitutes and changes as the game goes on. So there's a lot going on, but I have a ringside seat, literally, and just at the where the players come out, and so I have a tremendous view of the pitch, and I am able to follow the match.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I am, so I'm privileged in that sense.
And what does your match day look like then, Gerry? Does it depend on maybe who's playing or what's going on? You know, has your routine changed over the years, maybe, where you're putting, I suppose, as you more get more used to it as the years go on?
Yeah, it's pretty routine. I mean, on a normal match day now, for example, Dublin and Roscommon are playing on Saturday. It's at the 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock throw-in. So I'll be in at about 4 o'clock, because there's a lot of preparation to be done beforehand. I do a lot of stuff that's on the big screen, so you know, there might be changes to what's going on. I want to run through them, see what's coming up, and changes on the teams that I'd have to know. Any other kind of stuff that might be going on. There's a production meeting before everything happens, and there's a briefing there, and then get my radio stuff organised, and have something to eat, and then ready for match time. It comes along weekly. And I usually have stuff going on at halftime as well, coming in months called presentations. We're sponsored by Allianz. So during every halftime, we have presentations to some star children that have performed in our Allianz coming in months called final. So that kind of stuff will be going on. So I need to be in early and they need to be relaxed. And once I have my preparation done, and I would have a lot of it done the night before, even though at this stage now I could probably do it without any notes, but just have the notes there in case anything went wrong. Yeah, I love it, and I'm very relaxed. All Ireland final days would be totally different now because I'd be in really early in the morning. Mm. I'd hop over to the Up for the Match program, which is really interesting, and the night before the All Ireland, and I bring it back then. I bring it into Cork the following morning for Mass. We start everything on All Ireland Day with the Mass in the stadium for kind of key workers, and we have breakfast then, and it starts really early because there's always a huge amount of preparation for our Ireland final. There's stuff going on that wouldn't happen at any other game. But as I say, I just love it. I wouldn't be fazed by the crowd or by the excitement of the day. Like, I really love it. And yeah. I consider it a massive privilege to be where I am.
And you've been witness to some absolutely amazing games. Now, Croke Park has been home to events outside of GAA as well, but just sticking with GAA for a second, are there any games, hurling or football, that particularly stand out as, wow, I can't believe I was there?
Yeah, there'd be so many. Like, it'd be very hard. Obviously, Kerry's wins are special to me, and like having a huge vested interest in Dublin as well. I remember 2011 now when we were beaten, and I was devastated, obviously, the Kerry loss. But when we went back into the schools on the Monday and saw what it meant to Dublin, like, they hadn't won, none of the children in primary school would have seen the Samuel Gore Cup prior to that. Like, it was, what, I don't know what it was, 10 or 11 years
95 I think was before that, yeah.
So it was a massive gap, and you know, that was huge compensation for somebody from Kerry who might be disappointed to see the benefit that Dublin and the children that we were coaching were getting out of that win, what it meant when the cup came round to the school, and my own school in particular, Holy Trinity School in Donaghadee, like, which was, it was just phenomenal that a player come in with the Samogar Cup and bring it around to the classes. So that was, yeah. I'm a particular love of hurling, and had the honour of being put into the Dublin Hurling Hall of Fame in recent years for the work that Cumann na Munscoil has done. Wow. To promote hurling, and you know, Wexford making the breakthrough, Offaly winning All Ireland, Clare, and of course the Limerick thing at the moment is a phenomenal team, probably one of the greatest teams that ever played the game, and to be there on those occasions, those recent ones, I think phenomenal. I was talking to the Dr. Con Murphy from Cork, who everybody would know. He's been around a long time now, and he got onto the pitch, the first or second win that Limerick had. They beat Cork and fairly comprehensively beat them, and I said to Con, I said, like, that was some walloping, but there's no shame in being beaten by a team as good as that. And He said, Jerry, he said, I think that's the best team I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Wow.
That was some praise from Cal Murphy. And definitely. I think he's right. They're an amazing team. And they're not finished yet. So to be with all those games, like, it'd be hard to pick one or two, but like,
yeah,
phenomenal locations, and there will be equivalent football occasions as well. Like, it's amazing. And the Kerry clubs, and particularly Carsevine coming up and winning when you're an intermediate championship.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
they were really special for me. And, you know, to have all the people from the town up, and my old schoolmates and everything, and to see those teams win, and what like Sean Kelly brought the matches into Croke Park, and I think it's probably the greatest thing he ever did. Like, he'd be credited with putting up the stadium for soccer and rugby, but bringing the junior intermediate champions into Croke Park was one of the most amazing things he ever did, because that brings success and a huge enthusiasm into the grassroots, the real grassroots, the people who keep the association going.
Yeah,
in towns and villages.
And you talk about giving a chance to people that mightn't necessarily get there in other circumstances. And a huge example of that is the Special Olympics, which of course came to Croke Park in 2003. How unique was that to be a part of, Jerry?
Oh, amazing! Absolutely, that's one of the greatest events ever in Croke Park, and you know, to be present in the stadium with Nelson Mandela and Muhammad Ali, and you know, all the most amazing athletes that were there, and the razzmatazz, the way it was planned, the presentations. I think it took everybody's breath away. It's one of the most amazing and iconic events that was ever held in Ireland, and not to mention Croke Park.
And of course, as you say, Sean Kelly responsible for bringing soccer and rugby into Croke Park as well. You were also involved in some of those big days. How would you describe the atmosphere, I suppose, of that game that when the English rugby team came to Croke Park and played in 2007? How did it compare to a regular, I suppose regular is probably the wrong word, but an All Ireland final, for example, you know?
Yeah. Very, very different, really. And the thing about the Irish English one was the whole build up about the anthem and the debate and discussion and acrimony and everything that happened the week before about, and the nervousness. And I was involved with the in the build up to that. And I wasn't actually announcing in the stadium that day. The IFU brought their own people, which is understandable. And I was involved in the press box. But the whole build-up, and then the way the anthem actually came across, and, you know, you had people like the John Hayes, the Bull Hayes, with tears running down his face. I think that summed it all up for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it was a hugely emotional experience, because nobody knew what the reaction was going to be, and was anybody going to misbehave, and like, you could hear a pin drop. That was a really special moment in Irish sports, not just GAA sports.
Yeah.
But to walk in the press box that day, where you had international journalists, a totally different set of journalists that you would have at a Gaelic match, and former rugby players, and a lot of the English rugby legends were there, as well as Irish, because a lot of them are involved in journalism and in analysis, and you know, to speak to them. And the one thing that came across from all those people in the press box that day was how amazed they were at the stadium and at the press facilities, and to hear them say, this is world standard, and these guys would have been all over the world at rugby matches in New Zealand and everywhere, and Australia. And you know, to think that an amateur organisation could actually have a stadium like this with world class facilities was amazing, and me and everybody else who was involved so proud that the Gaelic and Athletic Association could actually achieve this. So it put the stadium and it put GAA and our country on a different level, really, because everybody was watching that all over the world to see what would happen. And you know, that they actually won the game as well, and Shane Hogan actually got a try that day. Shane is a former Cumann na Munster man as well. And,
brilliant.
And it was a great day.
And as you say, there's always such emotion in those big events, All-Ireland final and games like that, and the Special Olympics, obviously massive emotion as well, the commemoration of Bloody Sunday as well in Croke Park. Do you find it difficult to keep your emotions out of it, let's say watching those significant events? You know, you kind of have to be the impartial guide for the audience.
Yeah, you do, and I don't really find that difficult. I really don't find that difficult in the normal course of events. The only one I found that really kind of affected me emotionally was two things, really. I did I did took part in a commemoration for the Omagh bombing. I think that was 1998 when all those people were killed in Omagh. And I was asked to present something at the commemoration. It was only a week later, I think. There was some game in Crow Park, and I dressed up the children in all 32 county colours, and each one of them called out a name of one of the victims. And two members of the Arcane Band came along the line, and one with a microphone and the other with the flag, and they called out the names. And that was a really emotional day, I must say. And I wasn't involved in the announcing that day either. I was down on the field with the children, but you could feel it in the stadium. And the most amazing thing about that, and I still know many of the children who took part in that, one of them ended up teaching in my own school, and they all remember the name that they called out.
Wow.
All those years later, it had such an impact, because at the time, you know, that was such a terrible tragedy, and that there was an unborn baby killed in that as well. But to hear those names being called out, like, was heartbreaking.
Yeah, of course.
The other thing was the Bloody Sunday commemoration we did in recent years there on the anniversary of Bloody Sunday, and I took part in that. There was a huge ceremony in Crow Park, and I did the links between the various things. Mikey Deegan was there, and I saw some very important dignitaries, and you know, to again calling out the names of the victims, I found that particularly difficult, because I've been involved in the weeks up to that with Michael Foley, the journalist who has done some amazing work on Bloody Sunday, and there were three children killed, and I asked Michael could he find for me what schools they went to, and one in particular he attended. He was shot on the day. He was sitting in a tree, I think. I can't remember the exact circumstances now, but he was only a kid. He was only 14. But I figured that he may well have played in Cumann na Munscoil competitions when he was in school. And he went to St. Pat's School in Drumcondra, which is one of the founder members of Cumann na Munscoil. And I got on to the principal, and we went down there one day. I brought Larry, who was the president at the time, sure, because I mean, it wasn't Larry McCarthy, who was his predecessor, and John Costler from the Dublin County Board. And they had actually found the school roll book.
Wow.
with his name in it, where he enrolled in the school. So he almost certainly played in Cumann na Munscoil competitions, because they were very involved at that particular time. And she found the 1916 roll book as well, and showed us that where there was, in Red Byro across Easter week, school closed due to insurrection in Dublin City. And that was at Easter in the year when he would have been in the school as well. Like, it was which was very emotional. So to have to call out his name on the night in Crow Park when that ceremony was going on was something that will always live for me. And I never ever got a reaction on my phone to anything like I did to that night. People were fascinated by what went on, and the sadness of it. And Brendan Gleeson did the main narration that particular night, so it was such a pleasure to work with him as well. A real gentleman. So those kind of things stick in your mind.
Of course, Gerry, we're way over time, and I could talk to you all day long, but just finally, have you ever been recognised, I suppose, by people who hear a voice outside of Croke Park? Do you ever just get that whole, whoa, hang on a second, you know, can you say extra time, or Aon Breisha, you know, can you call out my number on the team?
Well, if I was in the pub at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd have a queue of people queuing up to say, would you put this in my phone, number 16 from Meade, from John Murphy, from Nobber, is coming on. I get that all the time. I do, it's fun. The funniest thing that ever happened to me, well, it does happen all the time, it's just amazing, they recognise the voice, you know, it kind of, it's like an earworm that it goes into their heads, and thankfully they don't recognise the face, but the voice does stick with them. But I was in New York, I have a daughter, Julianne, in New York, and I was down Times Square one time looking for a sports shop, and I asked a New York cop who was nearby, and the next thing I heard a voice from behind me, number 16 for Dublin, Evan Comerford is coming on for Stephen Tuxton, and when I turned around, it was a fella dressed in a Spider-Man suit. Recognised voice, but he was from Loughrea in Galway. He was doing a gig outside a toy shop.
My God.
And we had a great chat, but things like funny things, but it's nice to be recognised. Yeah,
we have worldwide recognition. Listen, Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Spider-Man knows you have it made.
That's it. Yeah. Listen, as I say, Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could talk to you all day long. Unfortunately, we're way over time, but thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. And listen, congratulations again on your achievements for coming to Munster and as a Croke Park announcer as well.
Thank you, and good luck with your show. Thank you, Mark.